It's time to get ready for a journey into the love of art and the art of love. Welcome to Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon, the show that takes an honest look into the heart of all things that shape the fabric of your entire life. And now, here's Nancy.
Hello, I'm Nancy, and this show is my gift to you, my audience. Seekers of truth, happiness, a better life, and a better way of relating to others. My intention is to answer your questions to the best of my ability in a way that empowers you to make appropriate changes in your perspective and in your life. When you change your perspective, your outside circumstances will also change because of the shift that took place inside of you. Does that make sense? I am here to open you up to a new way of thinking, a new way of looking at life so you can be the best you can be in all possible ways, whatever that means for you. It might mean better health, better relationships with your partner or your family, your boss and coworkers, a higher level of fulfillment in your daily living experience, or just more knowledge to make informed decisions. Since this is my introductory show, I'm going to tell you a little bit about why I'm doing an Ask Nancy radio show. Well, first of all, I love doing radio, and I love writing emails that help people gain knowledge so they can see a light at the end of the difficult challenges they are currently going through, and many of us are going through a lot of difficult challenges. I got a really true sense of my passion for writing emails back in 2011 when I joined a program called Feast for the Soul. The purpose of the program was to help prisoners by writing to them and providing them with guidance for their yoga and their meditation practices, and any spiritual questions or concerns they were having. We worked with prisoners who wanted the help. Many of the prisoners thought of it like a pen pal dating service, and they were up for any type of communication from women from the outside world, but there were a few inmates who took it seriously. I was assigned to help Hector. He was an inmate in a Texas prison who really wanted change in his life. He was hungry for the knowledge I sent him, which made the interaction between us very fulfilling for me as well as for him. Someone actually wanted to hear what I had to say. I don't know if you can even imagine how satisfying and fulfilling that was for me. I've spent years studying with great masters, dedicating myself to truth and enlightenment. My daughters didn't want to hear it. My husband, now ex-husband, called it voodoo. He was afraid of what he might find if he started questioning his own feelings and beliefs. Hector, on the other hand, was eager to learn more, to understand life, and to find a way to make a difference in other people's lives. Through our correspondence, he remembered a part of himself, a part that is in all of us, the part that wants to be of service to humanity in some way. When we started writing, Hector was in solitary confinement. Since that time, he went through a lot of challenges, personal hardships, and, you know, a tremendous amount of growth. He went through different programs inside the prison and was transferred to several different prisons throughout Texas. This summer, in 2015, he was released. Yay! He was an awesome person, and he challenged me to be the best I could be, to be clear in my guidance and explanations. You know, teaching someone something in writing is much different than speaking it on the phone or presenting it in a classroom setting. I couldn't look into his eyes to see if he understood or search his facial expressions for signs that I'd gone way overboard into the realms of mystics and mystery that could seem unbelievable and at times incomprehensible, when all he wanted to know was the reasons behind and the solutions to some of the common everyday problems all of us go through at some point in our lives. I realized that the information I was writing in my letters to Hector could benefit so many more people than just this one individual. So at a time when I was reevaluating my professional direction, I asked myself, what do I really want to do that will bring me great joy and be of service to others? Hector immediately popped into my mind, and this is what came out of it. A radio program that answers your most pressing questions. And if I can't answer them, I will bring on an expert guest who can. Okay, let's get started with the first question. Dear Nancy, I'm pregnant and I have to tell my dad and I'm super scared and I don't know how to do it. I'm 23 years old and I've been living with my boyfriend for about 4 years. We are responsible adults. He works and I work part-time while I'm in university getting my degree. My dad is going to get really mad at me and be disappointed in me. He's going to think I'm going to quit school. Sometimes he gets it in his head about something and won't listen. Even if I say I'm staying in school, he won't believe me. I actually have nightmares about telling him. I'm terrified. What do I say? I'm afraid my mom might not talk to me because I don't think she likes my boyfriend, and I'm young, and she is worried about me getting trapped in a relationship. She always used to say, be a lesbian or marry rich, and I'm neither. Signed, Scared Mama to Be. Well, Scared Mama to Be, thank you so much for having the courage to share your fears with me. It takes guts to voice what is actually going on inside you. And congratulations! This is a very exciting time in your life. Nothing will ever be the same again. Babies and motherhood have a way of changing your choices and the way you see life. No matter what age we are, we think we are adults and all grown up. Then a baby comes along, and that's when the true meaning of being an adult kicks in. It's not about us anymore. It's about raising that child to the best of your ability. That often means questioning your behaviors, your belief patterns, and things you may never have thought about questioning before, like yes or no to vaccinations, public school, private school, or homeschool, what disciplinary measures are you going to take, if any at all, things like that. But let's get through step one first, telling your parents. There are a lot of issues hidden beneath the surface of this question that I would love to dive into. I'm going to start with the one that's right there on the surface. How do you tell your parents you're pregnant? You don't. The word pregnant conjures up so many different emotions in people that I would totally stay away from it. It's like the word God. It means different things to different people, good and bad, but always based on personal experience of some sort. Not yours, theirs. And yours. For a father, the word pregnant often means his daughter had sex and it went wrong. She got pregnant. And what are we going to do now? It's a dad's worst nightmare for his teenage daughter. I know you aren't a teenager. You live with your boyfriend. You pay your own bills, buy your own groceries, make your own decisions, and left high school a long time ago. But you will always be your daddy's little girl. And as a father, he sees it as his job to protect you. And to some dads, this can somehow mean he failed. Especially dads who are stuck in the past or in rigid beliefs, as you have mentioned. On some level, all dads know their daughters have sex or are going to have sex at some point in their lives, but they don't want to know about it on a conscious level. Very few fathers want to admit that their daughters are sexually active because for some reason they can't accept it. And if you can't accept something, it's very difficult to acknowledge it. So, chances are when you say the word pregnant, the only thing your dad is going to hear is, "Hey dad, I just had sex with my boyfriend and I got knocked up." I'm not saying this would be the response from all dads, but your fear in sharing your joyous news with your dad is very real and has to have a basis from his previous behavior somewhere. If we change the whole message and come at it from a totally new approach, there's a good chance you will elicit a more favorable response. Just for a moment, forget about your dad and how you think he will react. What is it you want to express to him? What do you want to share with him? Are you excited about starting a family and being a mom? Are you eager about bringing new life into the world and sharing the journey with your dad? It sounds like you want him to be part of your new family life because it's very obvious you want him to support your choices and accept you and this new child. So let's start there. I'm going to give your boyfriend a name to make this easier. He's now called Dustin. How about opening with something like, "Dad, I've got some super exciting, great news to share with you. This is so important that I wanted to tell you in person. Dustin and I have decided to start a family. I'm so grateful to have you as my dad, and now my baby is super lucky to have you as his granddaddy. Dustin and I are so happy, and we want you to share in the happiness and be part of our journey." Do you see how that's a totally different message? It's coming from your joy and excitement, not your terror and nightmares. It's coming from a place of love, inclusion, and family. It has to elicit a different response. Keep in mind that he will still have some sort of reaction. Just be calm and stay in a place of love. The next part of your concern is that your dad may not feel this is the best time in your life to start a family because you are still in university. It's certainly a heavy load, but you sound confident that you can do it. So if your dad is still in shock and doesn't bring it up, take the initiative to bring it up yourself so it doesn't cause you more stress by hanging over your head for a later date. Reassure him that you've thought about it and have a plan set up and it's not going to be a problem at all. Then give him a few reasons why he can be at ease about it. Remember, this isn't about you, it's about him. Yes, he cares for you and your situation, but he is thinking about himself right now and his hopes and dreams and visions for your life. It's all about him. So figure out what drives him and what his fears are and reassure him in a way that only you, his daughter, can. Next, you don't know how to tell your mom because you don't know if she likes your boyfriend. And in the past, she suggested becoming a lesbian or marrying rich. Sounds like your mom got trapped in a relationship that didn't serve her, and she loves you so much she doesn't want the same thing to happen to you. Not making excuses for her, just saying. This may seem like it's coming out of left field, but the fears we see in others are usually a direct reflection of the fears we harbor inside ourselves. I want to ask you this, scared mama. Is there any doubt in your mind whatsoever that Dustin is the right guy for you? And while we're here, do you have any doubts about being able to stay in university while you're raising a child? If so, now might be a good time to address these insecurities. We can never be 100% sure how long our relationships are going to last or what the future holds. The soul of the soon-to-be baby is the one who chooses his or her parents. Its desire is so powerful that it draws a man and woman together. Sometimes it draws together a couple who never should have been together in a million years. Maybe this is what happened to your parents. Other times it draws together people who are a good match. Whether you believe that to be true or not doesn't matter. What does matter is that you have made a choice to have this baby with Dustin. And that counts. I suggest you break the news to your mom in the same way you're going to tell your dad. Start it positive, with confidence, and come from your heart. You might be surprised how they respond. Then just be straight and ask your mom if she likes Dustin. Let her know that you would love her support of you and Dustin as a couple, not just you as her daughter. If you dig a little deeper into the energy of the statements you made, you might notice an underlying theme which is very clearly reflected in this sentence. My dad is going to get really mad at me and be disappointed in me. Why does it matter what anybody thinks? Sure, it's way nicer when people support us and when they appreciate us for who we are. It's super great when people actually agree with us, but none of that really matters. And most of the time, it never happens. Why do you so desperately want people to accept and approve of you to the point where you have nightmares telling the important people in your life about a miraculous and wonderful event? Look in the mirror and see the beauty and strength that is you. It takes a lot of courage to bring a new life into this world, especially when you are juggling a full-time university course, a part-time job, and a relationship. Yeah, you're still in a relationship. That takes courage, woman. You know, doubts are surely going to come and go. But whose are they? Yours or your parents? Is it your dad who is afraid it will be too much for you to handle and you will have to drop out of school? Or is it your own fear? Is it your mom who wants you to marry rich? Or are you afraid you can't afford to raise a child on your current income? Is it your dad who will be disappointed in you and your mom who won't talk to you again? Or do you feel somehow like you failed yourself and lost connection with who you truly are? You were strong and decisive enough to make these decisions, so call on that power again and stand confidently behind the decisions you've made. When you are your number one best supporter, it won't matter what anyone else thinks. It doesn't matter what we do in life. There is always going to be opposition. Motherhood brings out all sorts of crazy in other people. Suddenly, everyone else becomes the authority on how to raise your child. Don't let them be. Become the authority yourself. Listen politely if you have the time and inclination. Then do what you feel is right. Being a mom can make you a stronger person if you let it. I'll tell you a little story. When I was pregnant with my second child, my thyroid started acting up. I remember sitting on the sofa in the middle of the summer and I was cold. My sweater was right beside me, but I was too weak to put it on. That's how much my thyroid was out of whack. I was a healthy person. I swam and walked regularly, ate properly, and had very little stress in my life. Times were different back then. I had to go see an endocrinologist, a specialist who works with the glands. After driving 2 hours to London to see him and waiting literally all day, yes, all day in the waiting room, the receptionist told us to go home, that the doctor was running behind in his appointments and had left for the day. The next week, when I finally did see him, he told me I needed to go on thyroid medication, that the drug would shut down my thyroid gland and I would be on medication for the rest of my life, that I would have to continue to increase my dosage regularly. He said, matter-of-factly, "It's just what happens to women your age." I was shocked by his flippant attitude and the realization that if this was a man's disease, there would have been a cure for it a long time ago. But since I was just a woman, it was no big deal to shut down my thyroid and make me dependent on the pharmaceutical corporations. Yeah, right. I looked him straight in the eyes and I said, "No fucking way." Then walked out of his office and never went back. I wasn't stupid. I knew I needed to boost my thyroid for the health of my unborn baby, but there was no way I was going to let a flippant doctor trade my thyroid to increase profits for drug companies. So I took the drugs until the baby was born. Then with the help of a naturopath, I weaned myself off, and I've been fine ever since. Had I known about naturopaths and alternative remedies before, I probably never would have taken the drug at all. I would have found something more natural with no side effects. But, like I said, it just made me stronger and wiser. I hope this eases your fears, scared mama. I would love to know how it goes, so please write back and tell me. For those of you listening, whatever stage of life you are in, the message I'm sending out is that the need for approval will wear you out. It's a pursuit that never ends and is never satisfied because there will always be one person who does not approve of the choices you make, the clothes you wear, the beliefs you hold, or the way you live your life. And that's okay. What they think is none of your business, so don't make it your problem. Every one of us is a unique human being, and we are here to live and express the authenticity of our uniqueness. Find a way to let your light shine to the surface, and people will naturally be drawn to you because of who you are. All right, we are going to take a short little station break and be right back. Today's ditty is about the laughing epidemic of 1962. In Tanganyika, back in 1962, an epidemic of laughter broke out. It started in a small boarding school where a group of students started laughing, maybe at a joke or something, nobody really knows. Then the whole school started laughing. Then the whole village caught it and it spread to more villages and towns. Thousands of people were laughing. They say the laughing epidemic lasted from 6 months to a year and a half. Sounds like a lot of fun, huh? Well, my first thought was that some foreign military was experimenting with these people, messing with their minds by infusing the air with some nasty chemicals or dropping it in their drinking water. Because as much as laughter is fun for a few minutes, it's not natural to laugh for this extensive amount of time. It wasn't just laughter either. People were also crying, they were fainting, they were experiencing different sorts of pain in their body and having respiratory problems. So obviously it wasn't about being joyful. The girls who started the laughing epidemic were tested, as was everyone else in the school, but no one showed signs of infections or physical ailments. The food and the water in the school were tested extensively and didn't show any signs of pathogens or toxins. So that basically rules out my theory of nefarious chemical experimentation. So what was going on? It was called mass hysteria. Today it's called mass psychogenetic illness, MPI. These villagers were experiencing the symptoms of extreme anxiety. It usually occurs in a group of people who feel they don't have any power. It's a way for them to express that something is wrong. There were lots of changes taking place in the country at that time, and laughter was one outlet for the intense stress these girls and much of the country's population were feeling, but unable to express in healthier ways. As you might guess, it happens to women more than men. Apparently it happens often, even today. It happens in schools and in the workplace, and the way they manage it is by spraying the area with something soothing. There are natural scents that, when inhaled, have the effect of calming the nervous system. I, in fact, keep a diffuser in my house and use a variety of different essential oils to uplift, clear, calm or stimulate, depending on what I need to balance within my environment or within myself. Lavender is great for calming. I'm usually pretty calm and need something that actually stimulates me. So I often use a blend of citrus oils to help uplift my spirits on these dull, cold, gray Canadian winter days. I put a few drops of essential oil in my diffuser with some water and let that permeate the air. And it smells so nice too. So there you have it, the great laughing epidemic of 1962.
Blog posts, recipes, self-help books, and more. Visit us online at nancyatnoon.com. You'll be glad you did.
We are back and on to the next question. Dear Nancy, I'm an artist and I want to start selling my work. How do people price their artwork, especially commissions? I've had a few people say, price by the hour plus materials, but there's no way they're including marketing time, which should be huge. Signed, S.A. That is a great question and always a tough one to answer because there isn't a one-size-fits-all answer. Since not all art is equal, it's perfectly acceptable to price your work differently according to different types of work you want to sell. For instance, graphic designers generally charge by the hour. They set an hourly rate and guesstimate how many hours it will take them to complete a project or how many days it will take. Using this method, you would be able to charge a percentage up front as an initial deposit from the client. Depending on the duration of the job and the costs involved, you can then schedule subsequent installment dates for second and third payments and the remainder upon completion. Another option is to charge a flat rate based on the project. If you're designing logos, you may already know roughly how long it takes to create a basic logo. So again, even though this is a flat rate, it's also calculated on an hourly rate. But it's a solid price for the client. They aren't going to wonder if you're charging them for sipping cappuccino while texting your friends. If revisions are required, you can either include them in the price or let the client know there will be extra charges for additional work not listed in the original quote. And make sure to tell them how much and how you will be billing them. Those are two standards for commercial artists. Fine art, on the other hand, is a whole different ballgame. It's extremely subjective. What makes a 21 by 30 inch painting worth $782 million and another one of similar size only worth a couple hundred bucks? According to some experts, value is based on originality, the artist's reputation, the amount of time you put into it. Uniqueness is another factor that also adds value. What are you doing that is different from others? Did you create a new brush stroke or way of combining materials that hasn't been done before? Why do you think original artwork costs more than a huge print from Walmart? Because there is nothing unique in the so-called art that Walmart sells. Here's a true story. I rented rooms to two contract workers this summer who came from totally different backgrounds. They lived in different cities and they're of different ages. They have very different likes and dislikes. They came from different countries. Their original background is from, one is from Poland, the other one is from Germany. One of the men, Jack, just moved into a townhouse in the area, so I took him to a local art show where I had some of my work displayed. I thought it'd be a good opportunity to fill up some of his very tall walls. The other man, Frank, has no interest in art at all. Well, one day the three of us were talking and the subject of art came up. I probably instigated that conversation. Jack described the huge mural print that he has hanging, and I use that word loosely, that he has hanging on his wall. Well, wouldn't you know it? Frank has the exact same print hanging in his living room. Personally, I'd be mortified, not because there are 6 billion of those prints hanging on people's living room walls across the country. No, it's because quality, uniqueness, originality, time, reputation, and mystery, oh yes, mystery, are all missing. I only have original artwork hanging on my walls, not because I'm rich and can afford great works of art. Nope. It's because the general public isn't mortified to spend 10 bucks on a dime store print and think it's the same or close to the same as the original work of art that I create. You get what you pay for. Everything has an inherent vibration to it, and you bring that vibration into your home, and it radiates into your life. So be sure you know exactly what you are hanging on your walls. I price my work by gut. I feel for what feels right, what I'm willing to let go of a piece of art for, basically how much it's worth to me. Selling low undermines you and me as artists. I think it all comes down to self-worth. Sure, part of it is what the market will bear, but there are so many markets, all bearing different purchasing budgets and values. I seriously use my feeling senses. If it hurts, then it's too low. My work is still very underpriced according to what I know the value to be, but that's the mental component that I need to adjust inside myself. This probably isn't very practical pricing guidance for you, but it's totally ridiculous to price by time and materials unless you calculate like doctors and lawyers and factor into it the amount of time and money you spent in education, practice or internship, etc. Yarn a manufacturing factory, so certainly don't go by minimum wage. In the second part of your question, you mentioned about including marketing time in your price. I don't know that it's about including marketing time per se. Marketing time is included in your business expenses, which I suppose could be reflected in your artwork, but it's a business expense, much like operating costs such as electricity, water, rent, etc. The value of your work has to do with your knowledge, experience, time, intuition, ability to creatively express yourself, and the amount of time and money you have invested in your ability to provide a legitimate service and product for your clients. And of course, quality, uniqueness, mystery, and all that. Funny thing, my daughter's been studying political economics in university, and she said, "Mom, we need to do a cost analysis on your products to get the proper prices so you actually make money as a business." So one afternoon, we sat down and she started scribbling equations with no numbers and only letters across pages and pages of paper. Somehow or other, she solved the equation and came up with a dollar figure for one of my products. And I said, "Huh, that's exactly what I'm charging now." And I went by what felt right in my gut. That's all the questions I have time for in this episode, but I will leave you with this to ponder. Vincent van Gogh sold only one painting in his lifetime. He created over 900 paintings that never sold until after his death, and that is only because his sister-in-law dedicated herself to getting him the recognition he needed. At least one of his paintings today is worth $66 million. I sure hope Van Gogh came back to enjoy his fame and maybe some of the fortune in another lifetime. As a fellow artist, I seriously and sincerely feel for him. Not only that, Van Gogh paintings are among the most frequently stolen paintings, and some are still missing. So just because your work doesn't sell or you don't get the price you feel you deserve, that does not mean your work is any less valuable or desirable. I wonder if that was a message to self. That's it for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for joining us again on Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon. We've enjoyed your company and hope it's been fun for you too. If you like what you're hearing, please share us with your friends and family because, well, they might like us too. You can find us online at nancyatnoon.com. We've got fascinating blog posts, recipes, self-help books, weight loss CDs, coaching programs, art, jewelry, and all kinds of other cool stuff. Go ahead and check us out. NancyAtNoon.com. You'll be glad you did. It's time to get ready for a journey into the love of art and the art of love. Welcome to Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon, the show that takes an honest look into the heart of all things that shape the fabric of your entire life. And now, here's Nancy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome, and thanks for joining us. I'm Nancy Murdoch, and you are listening to episode number 2. I have a very special guest with me on the show today, Sean Bennett. Sean is going to tell us how we can live the lifestyle of the rich and famous on any budget. I've had the pleasure of knowing Sean for, over a year now, and I'm always amazed at the deals he gets. He globetrots for pennies. He has a $3,800 a month apartment in New York City, and he only pays $500 a month. And his neighbor is Harrison Ford. How wild is that? Sean is the man we all need to know, and he will be joining us in the second half of the show to let us in on some of his top secrets. In case you missed my introductory show, I'm here to answer your questions and open you up to a new way of thinking and a new way of looking at life so you can have better health, better relationships, more happiness, and a higher level of fulfillment in your everyday life, whatever that means for you. If you have questions you want answered, I'll tell you how you can make that happen a little bit later in the show. For now, let's get started with our first question. Dear Nancy, help! I am so lost in life. Today I packed up my dorm room that I shared with three other girls, and I moved to a sketchy part of town. Just brought my boxes in, and I have no idea what to do now. I'm sitting on a cardboard box of clothes in a gross-ass apartment. There's bugs and a gross-ass couch. I don't know how to clean it. My mom cleaned my dorm room at university, but she had to get a job because my dad went back to school. I don't know how to life or adult. I ate at the calf, or ate out. I never cooked for myself. My friends ditched me because I don't have money. I don't understand life. What do I do? I start my new job as a personal trainer next week. Signed, D. After reading your question this week, D, it reminded me of how many people are in a place of overwhelm these days. Seems like everyone is going through some sort of life changes. And the majority of people don't have the necessary life skills to deal with the transitions in a way that could be stress-free and even joyful. It's not just university grads. It's also people who have lost their jobs. It's women who have been homemakers and moms all their lives and have had to find a way back into the workplace after divorce. They're competing against young, eager college grads like you. Other people are struggling financially because they're taking care of elderly parents or trying to pay off medical bills, and many people are combating serious health issues, which is affecting their jobs and their family life. Everyone is up against some sort of challenge right now, and we need to come together and help each other. I reach a lot of people through this radio program, and I want my message to be one of everyone helping each other, because in one way or another, we all need help at some time or another. You inspired me, Dee, to start a segment on my show that is dedicated to life skills, the things we were never taught in school. We weren't taught self-care and the proper foods to eat to keep us healthy. We were force-fed nutritional guidelines that were underwritten by huge corporations promoting whatever the heck they're promoting, beef, dairy, soy, whatever the heck it is that makes them rich. We're bombarded by TV commercials that are trying to sell us every possible drug you can imagine. Medical schools are funded by pharmaceutical corporations. In fact, New York Times recently reported that of 8,900 professors and lecturers at Harvard, 1,600 admitted that either they or a family member have had some kind of business link to drug companies, sometimes worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's no money in you, me, or our neighbors staying healthy or dying. The money is in keeping us sick. Think about that. Anyway, the point is, we all need to learn a new set of life skills so we can be healthy, happy, and financially independent. And today, Sean Bennett is going to help me kick off this new segment a little bit later in the show. But right now, Dee, I know it can seem very overwhelming to be on your own when you've always had the security of mom and dad to take care of you and your friends to be there for you. But it truly sounds like you are off to a very good start. It may not seem like it to you just yet, but you have your own place to live in, a roof over your head, and a job. You are well on your way to lifing and adulting, as you called it. You've started a new chapter of your life, a whole new adventure. Decide how you want it to go. Then write your intentions down on paper. When we write things down, there's 80% more chance that they will happen, that they will manifest in our real life. What do you do next? I have two favorite life skills that have served me well. Common sense and determination. It's time for you to use some common sense. We were all born with it. Some people use it more than others. I rent rooms out to adult males who I swear have never heard of it before, but I think you have a good amount of common sense, and now it's time to put it into practice. You probably won't be getting your first paycheck for a couple weeks, at which time the rent will probably be due again. That's one thing you do not want to get behind on, so make a budget and stick to it. Don't spend more money than you have. Forget about eating out for a while, find some easy recipes online, make a shopping list, and get some groceries. Make sure you put a couple of cleaning supplies on your list and some rubber gloves, because that is your next task. I've found that dish soap and scouring pads pretty much cleans anything. You might want to get some disinfectant as well. Next, take stock of what furniture and appliances you want to keep and get rid of the rest, with permission from your landlord, of course. Habitat for Humanity and many other charitable organizations will come pick up used furniture if it's in good enough condition, so you may want to consider that. Next, dig in there and start cleaning. This is your home for a little while. Own it. Make it yours. Cleaning is pretty much something you can't fail at. Roll up your sleeves, add water, soap, and a little elbow grease, and you're off to the races. Cleaning for me is second nature. I've done it every day for pretty much my entire life. So I'm not really sure how to explain getting started. I don't know how many rooms are in your apartment, but you need to pick one room, start in one corner, and begin scrubbing the walls. You could paint the walls instead. I've always found that a fresh coat of paint can do wonders to transforming a dive into a cozy home. A few years ago, I threw a coat of old paint on my plywood floors to make them look, a little cheerier and finished. Well, a couple months ago, I couldn't stand it anymore, but I couldn't afford decent floors either. So I got out my belt sander and I went at it. I sanded some of the paint off. It wouldn't all come off. Then I put a coat of stain and varnish on top. The floor looks absolutely amazing. It totally pulled the room together. You know, it was a lot of backbreaking work, but it's so much warmer and cozier. And it took about, maybe 2 weeks to do from beginning to end. I had to buy a new can of stain, but I found a brand new gallon of Varathane in my basement that had never been opened. It was probably like 20 years old, but you know what? It worked fine. If you want free paint, here's what you do. Call around to your local hardware and lumber stores and ask if they recycle old paint. If they do, then you've hit a gold mine. That's how my daughter and I used to get paint to put a base coat on our large art boards before we did a painting on them. People would recycle good cans of paint that were barely used. It came in all colors, and the best part was, it was free. Get a couple different colors and mix them together. Have fun. Let your creativity shine. When you're ready to get some furniture, you can check out the Salvation Army, Habitat for Humanity, or your local swap and sell group on Facebook. Kijiji is also a great place to get good deals on furniture and household appliances, used, of course. I've bought and sold lots of things using those sites. Now, in regards to your friends, if they left you because you became poor, then they were never your friends to begin with. So let them go. Who wants to be around people like that anyway? You've outgrown them. There are lots of ways to make new friends. There might be a meetup group in your area. If not, check into the local groups and organizations around your town or your city. They're usually free, and there's probably something that will interest you. If not, volunteer your services to help someone else. But in truth, Dee, I think this is the perfect time to become your own best friend. It's good to be with yourself. Take this time to be okay on your own. Go deep inside yourself and get to know who Dee is again. Rediscover your strengths and passions. This is where true growth happens. Not a lot of people like themselves enough to be happy and at peace without external stimulation or entertainment or people around them all the time. I really think you're going to be okay, Dee. So this message is for everyone. If you can help someone, offer them your assistance. If you need help, ask someone for it. These times may be chaotic, but the solution is always to find that inner peace. If you have a life skill you want to share, drop me an email and I will consider having you as a guest on my show. Coming up after the break, Sean Bennett will be joining us to talk about how he got a great apartment at a fraction of the cost. And he's going to tell us how to live large in any economy and on any budget. Sean didn't start out rich. He grew up in a trailer park and was raised by a single mom. But he managed to find out how to enjoy the luxury perks usually had by only the rich and famous. You can do it too, Dee. Your life is just beginning. Sean made his way up in the world. And now he's a reality show star, a published author, corporate spokesperson, a working union actor, a corporate team builder, and just an all-round good guy. He's worked with Whoopi Goldberg, Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt, Kelly Ripa, Adam Sandler, Ron Howard, and Vanessa Williams, just to name a few. So stick around. We will be right back. If you have questions about love, life, relationships, happiness, health, and well-being, please email them to me at nancy@nancyatnoon.com, and maybe yours will be the ones chosen to be answered on air. If you need answers now, I provide a personal and private email consultation service. For details, please visit the Ask Nancy page on my website, nancyatnoon.com. And now it's time for another Daily Ditty.
Hey, it's Haley. I thought right now we would do some random facts of the day. Number one, the longest time between two twins being born is 87 days. That is long labor. My goodness. In 2007, an American man named Corey Taylor tried to fake his own death in order to get out of his cell phone contract without paying a fee, but it didn't work. 3. The oldest condoms ever found date back to the 1640s. They were found in Dudley Castle and were made from animal and fish intestines. That's gross. But at least they are being safe. In 1923, jockey Frank Hayes won a race at Belmont Park in New York despite being dead. He suffered a heart attack mid-race, but his body stayed in the saddle until his horse crossed the line for a 20-1 outsider victory. Everyone has a unique tongue print, just like fingerprints. It cost the U.S. Mint almost twice as much to mint each penny and nickel as the coins are actually worth. So taxpayers lost over $100 million in 2013 just through the coins being made. It's a lot. And your last one of the day. Kasu Marzu, I don't think I'm pronouncing that right, is a Sardinian cheese that contains live maggots. Gross. The maggots can jump up to 5 inches out of the cheese while you're eating it. So it's a good idea to shield it with your hand to stop them from jumping into your eyes. Oh my god, that's so gross. Well, those have been your fun facts of the day.
Want more interesting stuff like blog posts, recipes, self-help books, weight loss CDs, and more? Visit us online, nancyatnoon.com. Go ahead.
And we are back with my special guest, Sean Bennett. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thanks for having me, Nancy.
I've been very eager to catch up with you. You are into so many cool things. What have you been doing recently?
Well, I had a scene that unfortunately was largely edited out, but I was on The Good Wife last night with Vanessa Williams, who was awesome. She did 4 episodes of The Good Wife, and she shared her experience. She's thinking about coming back to Broadway. And so it was just great to work with her and to talk with her. And I had a small role in a Woody Allen movie this summer with Steve Carell and Kristen Stewart. And so it was interesting. Kristen was very friendly and talking to all the producers and the people on set. So those were two of my more glamorous, you know, projects. And then for having written the book Luxury Steals and Deals, I was invited to join the Beaux-Arts Society, which is a society that started in Europe, moved to America, essentially promoting the arts. So they crowned me a prince. So I guess it's never too late to become royalty, is what I'm learning.
Well, that's cool. You know, I love The Good Wife. That's one of the shows I watch, and I don't watch very much TV at all. So you said most of it was edited out, but that means something was left in.
Yeah, you basically see me and Vanessa, and she had 8 lines. I had 1 line. She was down to 1 line. I was down to a nod. But, you know, I have a cool photo out of it and the experience of, you know, being with her for, I guess, about an hour on a couch. So it was kind of fun.
Well, you are the first guest on my new show, on my new season of shows.
Oh, thank you.
And the very first to share your favorite life skill with our audience. So let's get down to it. How to live the life of the rich and famous on any budget. How has this skill served you? And how can people like me and my listeners get the deals you're getting?
Well, you know, it's stuff I stumbled upon that I didn't even realize was a skill set until I was sharing with coworkers. One of the jobs I do is PR for the automotive industry. And, you know, they have a budget. They pay us very well as like a day rate, more or less, to go to different parts of the country in the U.S. However, you know, they fly us coach and they put us at, you know, hotels in normal rooms, just like a normal person. But along the way, I learned tips that, like, oh, we could actually get status and get upgraded to free to first class. So Wi-Fi and coach and get free baggage and cut through the security line. So all the things that make, you know, traveling a little bit more annoying, you can bypass, essentially. It's not even about, you know, how luxurious it is, but making life more convenient if you have to work on the road. Same thing with getting, you know, upgrades at the hotels to a nicer room and then free food and Wi-Fi and gym, because each of those items can alone cost, you know, $10 each. And then essentially, I live in New York City. But, you know, Manhattan, the rents are outrageous. I mean, if you're, no matter how wealthy you are, you could be a billionaire, $30 million will get you a floor in a building. So that still means you're sharing your elevator, your kids have no backyard, and you have $30 million. So it's just ridiculous. Like, your value for your money in this city, above all, you know, to me, is really nil, no matter how much you have. So my whole objective when I moved to New York was to do things like, you know, The Good Wife and to be an actor and to use my voice and my talents as a host and as an actor. But in the meantime, you know, when you tell somebody you're a performer, they ask, where do you wait tables? Or and then you're like, no, I don't want to wait tables. Or it's that whole starving artist that in order to do what you love, you need to sacrifice. And I just didn't like that idea. I grew up poor. I'm like, I'm done with the sacrifice. So, you know, one of the main things, why don't we go with my big ticket item? It's the end of my first chapter because it was life-changing to me. So I'll just give a little bit brief synopsis of it. Affordable housing. I mean, believe it or not, you know, of course, most people know about government housing and most people don't have a very good view of that. And I'm not saying that's the way to go. But there are programs in New York and throughout the U.S. and I'm sure in other countries, such as Mitchell Llama, 80-20 housing. So Mitchell Llama was one of the first when rents started going up in New York to basically block out a certain amount of apartments for an affordable rate. So whoever had them can then stay in them as long as they need to. They can also then will those apartments to other people, and the rate is more or less rent controlled, so or stabilized, so it won't really become fair market value. And if you missed out on that, well, then there's usually programs for artists in different places all throughout the country and throughout the world. There's different housing programs. Sometimes, you know, they're nicer than others, but there was Manhattan Plaza, which is still in existence in Midtown Manhattan, and Alicia Keys lived there, you know, with her family, because it was these big buildings and they needed to fill it. And at the time, the area wasn't nice. And they wanted to change the neighborhood. And now Midtown is like Disney World. I mean, it's where everybody comes to see the ball drop. For a while, it was a little scary, like Taxi Driver. And you can see the Lion King in Midtown. And then my program that I got for my own housing is what's under 80-20 housing. The management company of my building is called Related. And I know they also exist in LA and other major cities in the U.S. They own Equinox, SoulCycle, you know, they're a big corporation, almost like a Trump organization. And what they allocate is 20% of their apartments in their new beautiful luxury buildings with furnished roof decks, washer dryers in your bathroom, you know, full amenities. 20% are paying very much below market value. And for doing that, they get tax breaks by the state. So if they let me in, and my rent when I first moved into this apartment, the retail rent was $3,800 a month for one bedroom in New York. And I got it for $540 a month by myself from the 80-20 housing. And so that was through Related. And so for them, basically discounting, what is that, like over $3,300 a month, they don't pay taxes then on my neighbors who are paying the full price. But I live just as good as my neighbors who are paying the full price. So there you have it.
Wow. Do you think that there are any programs like this in Canada?
I bet there are. I mean, I would look under how it works here. And it's probably similar there. I would look under, you know, your province or like, because here, say, it would be, you know, newyorkcity.gov housing. And then under that, you then have to just do your own research and see kind of what works for you, because there's also programs for everybody all throughout the U.S. Yeah, I didn't even cover this. To purchase, you know, so you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they had the bad reputation and the housing crisis and all that, but they're still around. So there's a lot of like first home buyer incentives. there's a lot of incentives usually for any type of government employee. So I'm sure the same goes in other countries as well. So teachers, firefighters, police officers, they'll get discounts on their loans. They'll get certain incentives, certain buys, and then artist housing, and then senior housing. And I'm sure that pretty much exists in most countries. And so, you know, in Las Vegas, like I think it's like Nevada.org, they have nice housing complexes for seniors. So essentially, you know, it's a nice condominium complex, but if the seniors don't have money, instead of having to buy it for $200,000-$300,000, they can rent it for $300 a month.
Wow, that is excellent information to know. What about the artist housing? What is that all about?
I was kind of blessed in one way. I'll do my little segue. When I first moved to New York, I lived with these elderly Jamaican ladies who owned a four-story brownstone on 84th and West End, which is a very nice residential neighborhood in Manhattan. And they rented the top floor to me for only $500 a month. And it seemed like my grandparents. They'd be like, "Hey, Grandma." And she'd be like, "I'm making some Johnny cakes and ackee." I'm like, "I'm coming down, Grandma." And so I was adopted by this Jamaican family, more or less. It was great. But then they were going to sell the home to their family. So they told me to quickly look for something. And, you know, I'm the deal expert. So I'm like, well, what can I find in a hurry? And one of those programs was the criteria. It was in Midtown, not Manhattan Plaza where Alicia Keys was, another called the Times Square building. And the criteria stated either you're formerly homeless, you're an artist in New York, or you're mentally ill. Because clearly, if you're an artist in New York, you're mentally ill the way of being homeless. So the neighbors would be interesting. You had your own private apartment, but, you know, I'd be in the elevator and somebody would be like, "Oh, I'm off to do Lion King." And then somebody else would be like, "Murr," because, you know, they had some issues. So wasn't my favorite, but in a pinch, there are all types of deals, you know, all around us. So, you know, that housing to me is just like such a big one from living in New York that, you know, for me, that was really life-changing. But what's awesome is, you know, there's deals on everything from, you know, travel to healthcare to gym memberships to anything. I know you mentioned a young lady who was just getting started in life. And so what better way to get started than getting a great deal on your rent? You know, really.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
We stop ourselves. We poo-poo it because we somehow feel like, oh, well, I'm not wealthy, so I won't be able to wear, you know, this designer outfit. Or I don't really have the resources, so I won't be able to do this. I mean, and I think the main difference in obtaining some of these deals is just having the mindset of why not, you know, why can't you, you know, live well and why can't you dress well? I think it's just a lot of our mindsets and how we view money and how we view material things is a little bit askew. And I think if we really picture just getting a deal, people wanting to help us, it's more inclined to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I think attitude is very important. You know, you have to stay positive and believe that you're worthy of all this. And I love that about you, Sean. Your attitude is always so positive, and it's like, I can do this. You know, why not? Why not me?
Exactly. Well, you too, Nancy. I mean, everything's about putting out, you know, good things into the universe. And we're not always going to get our way. And things like, you know, for instance, like the scene on The Good Wife didn't edit exactly like I wanted, but I had a great conversation with Vanessa. I got a cute photo out of it. So there's always tomorrow. Nothing's, you know, the end all be all.
Right.
You know,
that's
we
right.
create our own happiness and we create our own unhappiness as well. So I'd rather shoot for the happiness.
That's right. Why not?
Well, a lot of it, you know, I say take advantage of the system. You don't even need to, you know, we're just bringing it up off the cuff, I'll just give you some very easy tips. Macy's. I know in the United States, I don't know about Canada, but if you're from a different state, automatically gives you a 10 to 20% discount, you know, so you don't need to sign up for their credit card. So basically the same incentive they offer on their credit card, you can have for just showing your passport or your license for not being a resident of wherever you're purchasing from Macy's. So that'll get you a little bit. Then often you can get another 10 or 20% off of that price by applying for their credit card, and then you just pay it off. So now even without a sale, you got 40% off. Bed Bath Beyond, they usually always print 20% off coupons and they never really expire. And for clothing, I mean, I think a great option is definitely consignment stores and Rent the Runway. So if you want a beautiful ball gown that Charlize Theron did or Bag, Borrow, and Steal, you can sign up for a membership and rent these $10,000 gowns. And, you know, you certainly will rock the heck out of your Christmas party. If you're the secretary, they might wonder how you can afford it, but why not? There's always options, you know, and consignment stores, basically, you know, people who have money just wear things once or twice. So if you don't mind wearing a little bit of a hand-me-down, you'll have, you know, a $3,000 item for $200-$300. So it's now affordable if you want the top designer, you know, clothing and things of, you know, that nature. And online, there's always, you know, deals. It's just, you know, sometimes it may not be the exact size, color, item you thought unless you do extended research on it.
Is all this in your book, Sean?
It is.
Okay, tell me just a little bit about the book, Luxury Steals and Deals.
Exactly. So yeah, so you know, there's a couple options. You could go to luxurysteelsdeals.com, and you'll see a little synopsis. You can download a free chapter to check it out as well with some more little hints. You could sign up for my mailing list. And but what's great about the book, it's 9 different chapters, and each one has, you know, I say life changing because honestly, the housing was for me. It's, you know, I guess everything's relative, but I mean, living in a $4,000 a month apartment isn't so bad, especially when you're not paying it, you know? So that's the end of chapter one. The end of chapter two is mentioning how you can fly first class, and then on health and well-being discounts, shopping discounts, just kind of how you present yourself, you know, how to get like deals on different, you know, spiritual things such as like, you know, Reiki or different places that offer, you know, massages for a discount, and just kind of really narrowing down your goals. It's 9 different chapters with a lot of inspiration from other people I've met, read, encountered, and then with tips at the end of each chapter to just help you live the easiest, best life and to make life easy so you can make all your dreams come true, whatever they may be.
That sounds great. I am so glad that you took the time to be with us on the show, and I really would like to have you back again.
I would love to be back. Thank you for making me your first guest, and I feel very blessed to know you, and I'd like to wish everybody a wonderful and prosperous 2016, and may we all get steals and deals wherever we go, live in the lap of luxury, and just have the lives we desire and deserve.
I agree. So there you have it, folks. If you want to buy a copy of Sean's new book for yourself or give it as a gift to someone you know, go check out his website at luxurysteelsanddeals.com. And this is the ultimate handbook that can help anyone have it all without sacrifice. Until next time, may all your journeys be joyful.
Thanks for joining us again on Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon. We've enjoyed your company and hope it's been fun for you too. If you like what you're hearing, please share us with your friends and family because, well, they might like us too. You can find us online at nancyatnoon.com. We've got fascinating blog posts, recipes, self-help books, weight loss CDs, coaching programs, art, jewelry, and all kinds of other cool stuff. Go ahead and check us out. nancyatnoon.com. You'll be glad you did.